You need to respect the chair and shut your mouth.
One more reason we love Maxine Waters, because that was aimed at Jim Jordan, who was harassing Dr. Fauci, and boy, did he deserve that.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Elsewhere in California, on KFOI Red Bluff Redding, KKRN Round Mountain, KGOE Eureka. In Oregon, on KYAQ on the Central Coast, KSO Cottage Grove, KEPW Eugene. Lancaster, Pennsylvania, we're on WLRI. In Maui, Hawaii, KAKU. Columbus, Ohio, WGRN. Palinville, New York, WLPP. Rochester, New York, WRFZ. New Orleans, Louisiana, WHIV. Gallup, New Mexico, KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire, WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas, KPSQ. Seattle, Washington, KODX. Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR. Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950, KTNF. And coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk. Blanketing the globe 5 days a week and usually hosted by Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. But today, once again, you got me. I'm Nicole Sandler. I host the Nicole Sandler Show based at NicoleSandler.com to make it really easy to find us. Happy to be along for this edition of The Bradcast, and it is a busy day. And sadly, it feels like Groundhog Day in hell.
Preliminary information at this time is that the alleged shooter has taken his own life here at the scene. After a preliminary search of the grounds, inside and out, we have located 8 people at the scene with injuries consistent to gunshot wounds. Those 8 were pronounced deceased here at the scene. We have been made aware of multiple other people with injuries who have been transported to local hospitals or who have transported themselves to local hospitals. IMPD detectives are working with the Indiana State Police detectives, gathering information and interviewing not just those people who are here at the scene, but also those who have gone to area hospitals seeking medical treatment. A family unification center has been established at the Holiday Inn Express. Our victims assistance units and chaplain's office are here at the scene and at the Family Unification Center, assisting with family members who have shown up to this area.
On Thursday night, right around 11 p.m. local time, a gunman killed 8 people at a FedEx facility on the grounds of the Indianapolis International Airport. 4 others were rushed to hospitals with gunshot wounds, one of them critical. Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department spokesperson Janae Cook was obviously shaken to the core when she addressed the press.
It is very heartbreaking. And you know, Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, the officers responded, they came in, they went in, and they did their job. And a lot of them are trying to face this because this is a sight that no one should ever have to see.
The shooter was found dead nearby of apparent suicide. Police couldn't immediately determine a motive for the shooting. Just one more in a recent series of attacks across the country. But I was shocked that this story, a mass shooting, 8 people dead, 4 more hospitalized, was not even the lead story on the major newscasts Friday morning, because we're numb to it. Another day, another mass shooting. Welcome to America. Sadly, today we're fighting these senseless murders committed not only by shooters like the one in Indianapolis, but by the very people whose job it is to serve and protect. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin on Thursday told the court in his murder trial for the death of George Floyd that he would not testify. Instead, said he would invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination, and then the defense rested.
Then prosecutor Jerry Blackwell brought back Dr. Tobin, remember him, to testify as a rebuttal witness, countering a defense witness's suggestion that the tailpipe exhaust might have contributed to Floyd's death. Dr. Tobin said the level of carbon monoxide in Floyd's blood was normal when he died, after Chauvin pinned him to the ground for 9 minutes with his knee on George's neck. And then the prosecution also rested its case, giving the judge and attorneys the chance to work out the jury instructions. Closing statements will happen Monday. And now we turn to Chicago, where Mayor Lori Lightfoot appealed for calm on Thursday after the release of body camera video showing a police officer shooting and killing 13-year-old Adam Toledo in March. On the video, you see that after a brief foot chase, the boy appeared to throw something behind a fence and then turned to face the officer with his hands up after the cop shouted, "Show me your hands." Toledo raised his hands, which in that final frame of the video before he crumpled to the ground were empty. Police did find a handgun by the fence. Lightfoot, the mayor, and Toledo's family lawyer said in a joint statement that releasing the video, while hard, was, quote, the first step in the process toward the healing of the family, the community, and our city. I don't think we're anywhere near healing. People are hurting right now. The Biden administration announced Thursday it would expel 10 Russian diplomats and impose new sanctions against Russia for the hacking of corporations and federal agencies and for meddling in last year's presidential election. The sanctions target 6 Russian companies believed to have supported the cyber attacks known as the SolarWinds breach. The U.S. also imposed sanctions on 32 individuals and entities suspected of helping the Kremlin interfere in the election with disinformation and other tactics designed to help the former guy win. The action signaled President Biden's desire to take a harder line against Russian President Putin than Trump did. The 10 diplomats being kicked out include suspected Russian intelligence operatives. But wait, there's more. Inside the Treasury Department's public report on these new sanctions was a detailed revelation that Konstantin Kilimnik, an associate of the former guy's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, passed along Trump campaign polling data to Russian intelligence services back in 2016. Yeah. Kilimnik, who had already been identified in previous government investigations as a Russian intelligence operative, also, quote, sought to promote the narrative that Ukraine, not Russia, had interfered in the 2016 presidential election. This establishes for the first time that private meetings between Manafort, former Trump campaign aide Rick Gates, and Kilimnik were a, quote, direct pipeline from the campaign to Russian spies at a time when the Kremlin was engaged in a covert effort to sabotage the 2016 presidential election. I guess the former guy can no longer say, no collusion. Well, he can because he lies incessantly, but you knew that already. Well, on Thursday, a group of progressives from the House and Senate introduced a proposal to expand the Supreme Court from 9 justices to 13. Well, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said that she has, quote, no plans to bring the bill to the House floor, although she said she supported President Biden's creation of a commission to examine possible changes to the high court. Those could include expansion, term limits, or other reforms. Republicans, of course, are criticizing the proposal as an attempt to pack the court. In reality, it's the Republicans who've been packing the court. This proposal was a response to the Republicans' expansion of its majority to 6-3 by refusing to consider former President Obama's nomination of Judge Merrick Garland when he still had a year left in his term. Garland is now Biden's attorney general. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made a surprise trip to Afghanistan on Thursday in a show of support for the country's government. The visit came the day after President Biden announced plans to withdraw all remaining U.S. troops by the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks that prompted this, America's longest war.
The United States will remain Afghanistan's steadfast partner. We want the Afghan people, countries in the region, and the international community to know that fact. It's also a very important message for the Taliban to hear.
Blinken met with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and attempted to assure him that the Biden administration would do, quote, everything we can to push for a peace deal between Kabul and insurgent groups. Foreign forces under NATO command will also leave in coordination with the U.S. In COVID news, almost half of the states saw an increase in coronavirus cases this week. And experts are urging people to maintain safety precautions and get vaccinated to avoid another spike. Vaccine hesitancy has become a problem. And even though more than 30% of U.S. adults have been fully vaccinated, the efficacy of rollouts has varied widely from state to state. And around the world, countries like India and Brazil continue to set daily records for new COVID-19 cases. Meanwhile, the U.S. government and Gavi, that's the Vaccine Alliance, have kicked off a pledging event aimed at raising $2 billion more to support vaccine distribution to lower-income countries around the world. A new development in the investigation into the January 6th Capitol uprising, a guy named John Schaefer, a heavy metal guitarist and self-described lifetime member of the Oath Keepers, will become the first rioter to plead guilty to charges based on his participation in the attack, and he's expected to enter into a cooperation agreement with the government. This move came at an unannounced proceeding before U.S. District Court Judge Amit Mehta on Friday morning. Mehta acknowledged that the deal included a cooperation agreement. Schaefer, who was seen on camera deploying chemical spray at officers, will plead guilty to charges that he obstructed Congress's effort to certify the 2020 election results and that he unlawfully entered a restricted building. So there's that. And then there's this. I think President Biden has just broken his first campaign promise. He's apparently decided not to lift the cap on refugees for the current fiscal year from the level set by the Trump administration. This, according to a senior administration official speaking on the condition of anonymity, this is a big change from Biden's original proposal to Congress that he lift the cap from 15,000 to 62,005 and then push it to 125,000 the following year. Instead, Biden is adjusting the allocation limits set by Trump, which officials have said have been the driving factor in limiting refugee admissions. The new allocations provide more slots for refugees from Africa, the Middle East, and Central America, and lift Trump's restrictions on resettlements from Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. As far as I can tell, no word on what will happen the following year. I guess we wait and see. But this is the first broken promise that I've identified from this administration. But wait, there's some late breaking news. This from Jim Acosta at CNN, who just tweeted moments ago, after blowback from progressives, the White House announces Biden will set an increased refugee cap next month. Jen Psaki saying, quote, we expect the president to set a final increased refugee cap for the remainder of this fiscal year by May 15th. I love it when they listen to us. Alrighty then. All right, I got one more for you. But we need some appropriate music. The Defense Department has confirmed that leaked photos and video of unidentified aerial phenomena, as they describe them, taken in 2019 are indeed legitimate images of unexplained objects. Photos and videos of triangle-shaped objects blinking and moving through the clouds were taken by Navy personnel. This according to Pentagon spokesman Sue Gao in a statement to CNN. She also confirmed that photos of three unidentified flying objects, one sphere-shaped, another acorn-shaped, and one characterized as a metallic blimp, were also taken by Navy personnel. We are not alone. And they're probably appalled at all the shootings here in the United States. Just saying. And as if all that's not enough, there are a couple more stories to tell you about. We'll be joined later in the hour by Ryan Grimm, D.C. Bureau Chief of The Intercept. But first, coming up next, we're going to check in with my congressman. You may not know this, but I live in Florida. Yeah, Believe me, I have all those thoughts too. Anyway, Ted Deutch has been the representative for Florida's 22nd congressional district, I want to say for about 10 years now, and he has progressively moved a little bit more progressive. And I reached out to him because it was just a few weeks ago that he finally signed on as a supporter or co-sponsor of Medicare for All. So I wanted to thank him. And then, you know, look, this district includes Parkland, Florida. It's the next town over from me. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is about 10 minutes from my house. So Ted Deutch is no stranger to all of these shootings. It is now one of his main issues. So we'll be right back with my Congressman Ted Deutch. Coming up next, I'm Nicole Sandler, your guest host today on the broadcast.
Please don't let me die in Florida. I don't care about my name. If you kiss me dying in Orlando, throw my head onto a train.
You're listening to the broadcast. I'm Nicole Sandler, your semi-regular guest host, filling in for Brad and Desi again today. You know, my show airs live weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, at nicolesandler.com/listen-live and the Progressive Voices Network. And I'm based in South Florida. And on Monday, I started the week with a conversation with my Congressman, Ted Deutch. I've known Ted Deutch for a long time. I first met him when he was a state legislator here before he moved to Congress. And it's been an interesting progression, as Ted Deutch was not always very progressive. He was more centrist. I mean, he was always a good guy. But me being me, I would criticize because I didn't feel that he was moving in a progressive enough direction. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, when the progressives in Congress, led by Pramila Jayapal, introduced Medicare for All, Ted Deutch had signed on to it and participated in the launch. I was so excited. I texted him. I still have his cell phone number from the days when he was in the legislature, to thank him. And then I sent a note to his office inviting him on my show. And because we talked about a lot of things, not only Medicare for All, but the recent spate of gun violence, I thought it was timely, which we talked about because the district includes Parkland, Florida, where the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas high school massacre happened. It's a topic he's unfortunately all too familiar with. And given what we've experienced over the last few weeks, I thought this is an important topic to bring up. And there was another mass shooting on Thursday night. It just never ends. So with that, I say welcome to my Congressman Ted Deutch. It's so good to see you.
Great to see you, too. It's a pleasure. How have you been?
You know, I've been, just hanging in there. I've been staying home. I've been home for the last year since March 22nd when we shut down Broward County. I had been volunteering every weekend at the Broward County Animal Shelter, helping to get dogs adopted. It was the best thing. I was going every weekend for the previous year, working to help get those dogs out of there and find them homes. And then on March 22nd, we were shut down. And since then, I've been home. And I finally got my second Moderna shot 2 weeks ago last Wednesday. So I'm good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I got to see my kid. I got to hug her last Wednesday.
So great.
You know, slowly but surely. And how are you doing? You all vaccinated and good to go?
Yeah, doing okay. And, we're starting to see some changes and people are getting vaccinated. And we've worked really hard to make sure that after the American Rescue Plan passed, that it was going to provide the benefits that it's supposed to, so people can start to get back on their feet and hopefully get out there a little bit. So We're moving forward.
Yeah, right? Please, except right. But the problem is, Congressman Deutsch, we have, you know, we have a governor in this state who, you know, didn't want to take any precautions. And therefore, we now find Florida among the hardest hit states in this latest surge. And likely, I'm guessing a lot of it had to do with spring break.
Yeah, look, the concern all along with the governor is that he wasn't transparent about anything he was doing. It was impossible to get any information going back to the very beginning, more than a year ago, when the cruise ships docked here and there were cases on there, and we couldn't even get information from him about that. And then carrying all the way through and decisions made about how they're going to report COVID tests and COVID deaths and right up through where we are now. And all we said all year, Nicole, and we were really clear about this, is, look, we all want the same thing, but it's not to reopen. It's to reopen safely and get people back to work. It's not just to have businesses operate. It's to have them operate well. And the idea was to get people the help that they needed. And that's what we tried to do. And we had a hard time getting it from the last administration. Unfortunately, we're now getting it from President Biden and his administration.
Thankfully. And I noticed, like, that, for instance, starting today, the Hard Rock Stadium, that's the big stadium just off the turnpike, is, you don't even need an appointment. Just go and show up. And I guess if you're 18 or older, you can get vaccinated. So good. And I hope everybody does, because I want to get back to normal, although it's going to be a while before, you know, I'll feel safe going to an event. Like I saw the baseball game where they were in Texas at full capacity. I'm sorry. And yeah, just I think people need to be responsible. And unfortunately, it's been made a political thing, and it shouldn't be. Wearing a mask or getting vaccinated doesn't have politics. The COVID doesn't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat or something else.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we all want the same thing. We all want to get through this. And even just continuing to listen to what we're told. If you've been vaccinated, that's great. But continue to wear a mask when you're out in public.
Of course.
And if you're home with other people who are vaccinated,
you're good.
Then you don't. But when you're out, just do what you can. We want to continue to protect the people around us and to help the community get to the point where everything can really try to get back to normal. And that's the goal.
So, Congressman Ted Deutsch, I fired off a text to you because I still have your phone number from the days when you were in the Florida State Legislature. It's nice to know your local representatives, because one of these days they could wind up in Congress. And I had to text to thank you for stepping up in favor of Medicare for All. I know this was a long battle. I know you had your reservations about it. But I also, on the day that you came out and said, yes, I'm all in, it was an event that the Progressive Caucus put together, I believe, with Pramila Jayapal, and it was an online event. And you warmed my heart so much that you called out my old friend, the late Mitchell Stolberg, who worked so tirelessly for Medicare for All. And thank you for recognizing him. We lost Mitchell last year, and just a huge loss to the progressive activist community here in South Florida. He was the guy in Broward County. And we are left with a real hole in his place. So thank you for recognizing him.
Of course, Mitchell was such a great advocate and fighter. And I think I might have said this at that event. Every time we held a town hall meeting, Mitchell got there early, planted himself in the first row with a whole series of signs, Medicare for All, and whatever other issue he was putting, whatever great progressive cause he was championing that day. And he had an impact. And look, I have such admiration for people who commit themselves to the fight. And that's what I do. That's what you do. And we're all trying to make things better and give more people more opportunities to succeed and access to health care and more justice and a more just and equitable society. And for somebody like Mitchell to take the time, even when he was sick. Sick at the end, and he just kept going. And I am sorry that sorry he's no longer with us, but we clearly did. He left a big legacy, and,
yes,
and we
did.
Continue to be inspired by
yes, he did.
He did.
And in fact, because of Mitchell, I became a precinct committee woman, so I'm involved
all
in
right.
a way I never was before, because, you know, I have my issues with the party, but I think you have to affect change from the inside and the outside, so I'm honoring Mitchell's legacy like this. So anyway, no, Congressman Ted Deutsch, glad to hear you're with the program now. And there's an interesting news story today saying that there is a kind of a battle with the administration, that there's one contingent led by Nancy Pelosi that wants to see the monies used from the rescue plan and the infrastructure, whatever monies are available, to shore up the Affordable Care Act, to make subsidies more larger, which in fact, just an aside here, they are, because I went on healthcare.gov last week for both myself and my daughter. We both have our health insurance through healthcare.gov, and I was able to lower, and I didn't have to do anything. You just report a life change and go through the whole application again. Mm-hmm. Didn't really change anything, but our premiums both were lowered by about $100 a month.
Yeah, the American Rescue Plan, among the many things that it did, it covers 6 months of COBRA. It increases the subsidies, as you point out, which is a really big deal.
It is a big deal.
And what should be a big deal in Florida especially is it boosts the Medicaid expansion incentives.
Ooh.
So our budget in Florida could save $3.5 billion, but our governor, over the objection in this case of not just progressives and not just healthcare professionals and advocates, but over the objection of the business community and our hospitals, just refuses to expand Medicaid. And the result is that so many in Florida are our most vulnerable and continue to be left unprotected without Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And it's awful. And that's why we've got to look for ways to make sure that we get everybody access to quality health care.
Absolutely. And this is a little off topic, but elect a Democratic governor in 2022, please. We need to get rid of the guy there now because he's horrible. But anyway, back to the story. Here, let me read to you. Top Democratic allies are pushing the White House in different directions over whether to use an upcoming spending package to strengthen the Affordable Care Act or expand Medicare eligibility. Nancy Pelosi is pushing them to make permanent a temporary expansion of Affordable Care Act subsidies, while Senate Budget Committee Chairman Bernie Sanders is arguing for reducing the Medicare eligibility age to 55 or 60 and expanding dental, vision, and hearing coverage. I'm obviously with Bernie, are you part of this fight now?
Look, the reason that I signed on to Medicare for All, the reason that I think it's so important that we're having this conversation is because we've got to figure out how to close the gaps that exist.
Yeah.
How do we help address the inequities in healthcare? How do we make sure that everybody is covered? How do we improve Medicare to get more people the access to the quality care they need? So as this plays out, that's got to be what guides this.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole, we've got to be talking about what's the best thing we can do to help the largest number of people and to get them access to quality care. And it's a really important conversation that we're having. And the most important thing here is everybody who's involved in this conversation, I think we've now reached the point where it's no longer controversial to say this. I think everyone now just acknowledges that in America, healthcare, access to healthcare is a right, that it shouldn't be something that's reserved only for some people. We shouldn't get used to, it's not right for us to just expect that tens of millions of Americans won't be able to afford it. And when you start there, then this is the kind of discussion that we're having, and
right. It's
going to play out over the coming weeks and months.
Well, at least we're having the discussion. So that's good. And we're moving in the right direction. So that's good. There's something else. And I knew I wanted to talk with you about it today. I didn't realize how many incidents there would be in the few days leading up to our conversation. But there was another school shooting today in Knoxville, Tennessee. it just happened. So I don't know if there are any casualties, but at least one police officer was shot and numerous people were hit. That's what we know. We don't know, unless it's changed in the half 45 minutes I've been on the air, if anyone was killed or not. The bottom line is, this has got to stop. This is after, you know, days, just how many shootings in the last few weeks? And I mistakenly said, you know, we got a little bit of a reprieve with COVID where the school shootings calmed down. Well, yeah, because schools were closed. But now they're, while they're open, their shootings are happening again. And there are mass shootings every day. We just don't hear about all of them because not enough people were killed, which is kind of a perverse, you know, reason to report on one story and not on another. The fact of the matter is we've got a horrible gun epidemic, a murder epidemic in this country. You, Ted Deutch, are the chief whip of the Gun Violence Prevention Task Force in the Congress. Did that happen after Parkland? And my listeners know Parkland is in our district. It's right down the street.
It did. Look, these are issues that I've worked on since I've been in Congress. And it was always, it was shocking to me, and I think everyone was so angry over the fact that we couldn't bring ourselves, the Congress couldn't bring itself to take action after Sandy Hook, after 26 and 7-year-old kids were slaughtered. And then Parkland happened, and when it happens in your district and you get to know the families the way that I have, and not just the families in Parkland, but as a result, I've gotten to know so many people from around the country. I look at what happened today, and there was just something on Twitter before I got on with you, Nicole, about how they were setting up an area for families to go to wait for news.
And I
mean, the families in Parkland, I've had these conversations with them. They've talked openly about what it was like to go and sit and wait and wait and wait and wait. And finally, if you're still there, that just proves that the horrible news is what's coming. It's so painful and it's so unacceptable. And we've said now for months that the only reason there haven't been more school shootings is because people aren't in school.
Right.
And today's just another reminder of that. And look, you're right. It's the same thing every time. There's an announcement that there is a shooting and multiple people have been shot. And then we all get really angry and we pray that it's a low number, that maybe no one died, or right, if they did, maybe it's a small number. But we just expect these things to happen, and we can't accept it as normal.
No,
we can't.
And yet, in the last 2 weeks, I mean, we can reel off South Carolina, where the sixth person, the one who was injured, died. Boulder, Colorado, which was a place that I loved and now forever is tainted because it's the site of another mass shooting. Where was the other? You know, they run together and you forget. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't even remember where that third one was. And it just happened. And how can we? It's too much for any mind to handle. And yet still nothing. So Joe Biden, our new president, issues some executive orders last week. But there's only so much he can do with a pen. What did these executive orders accomplish? Anything?
They do. He's right to take up the issue of ghost guns and gun kits.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's right to take up the issue of red flag laws so that we can get guns out of the hands of people who pose a risk to themselves or others. The person that he picked to run ATF is someone who knows these issues and will be able to get a lot done. But on the things that he talked about, these are all things that Congress is sitting on. On red flag laws, I've introduced legislation that we ought to pass. I've got a bill that's going to outlaw high capacity magazines because nobody needs to fire off 50 or 100 rounds at one time. That's crazy. The same thing is true on ghost guns. There are lots of bills. The fact is, Nicole, there's so much legislation that's sitting out there banning assault weapons, which don't, these are weapons of war. They don't belong in our communities. We've done this before. We know what to do. We just have to have the will to do it. So what the president did was really, really important. Now he needs to follow that up and really lean on Congress and the Senate in particular to continue to take action and be bold and send things to his desk that can help save lives. And today's another reminder that there is literally no time to waste, because for the people in Knoxville today, and I haven't seen numbers, and I hope no one died, but there were people shot.
Yep.
And for them and their families, it's too late.
It is.
And it's too late for Parkland, and it's too late for Boulder, and it's too late for Atlanta. So Atlanta. By God, let's Atlanta. Take action.
Yes, it was Atlanta. And, you know, it just, it turns my stomach, as I know it does yours, and it's just so, it shouldn't be happening. You know, a few years ago, I wrote an article, because I believe the only way to get the Republicans in this country, in Congress, to do anything is to hit them in the pocketbook. And I really think that other countries need to issue travel advisories and tell their citizens, do not travel to the United States of America. It is not safe. It doesn't matter what town you go to, what city, walking down the street, your chances of getting shot are pretty good. So go anywhere else in the world, don't go to the United States. Would that motivate any of them if it hurt our tourism industry?
Well, we've already seen the response from places around the world. They don't understand it. They can't understand how this happens over and over and over again. I get asked about it. I do a lot of work in foreign affairs. Yes. I get asked about it by diplomats. I get asked about it when I travel to these countries. They can't understand how we just accept this, how it just happens again and again. So we're already seeing that. When the president says, as he said last week, that this is an international embarrassment,
it is.
He's exactly right, which is why we need to act. It's not just because it's a bold measure and that it's time to take that kind of step. It's that we're alone in the world on this. Mm-hmm. And this is the reputation that we have. And as you point out, whether other countries say something formally or not, people think about this issue now. When they think of the United States, they think about gun violence, and that's something that we ought to strive to change.
Without a doubt. There's so many things I would love to talk to you about, and I know your time is limited. You're back in session tomorrow, right? Congress has been out for 2 weeks. You go back tomorrow. There's a lot of work to be done. Do you think if the filibuster wasn't a question, would the House be able to get gun legislation done that, if it were no filibuster, could get through the Senate? Or is it the problem in both sides?
Well, look, the House passed the universal background checks. Mm-hmm. There's no question it's a bill that will help save lives.
Yep.
Simply requiring everyone who buys a firearm to go through a background check isn't controversial.
No, it's a no-brainer.
And yet, it should be a no-brainer. But the Senate won't do it because of the filibuster. I think the filibuster doesn't exist to give people who don't believe in common sense gun safety measures the ability to block them. If anything, make them stand up. Let Marco Rubio go on the Senate floor and Rick Scott stand on the Senate floor and have to explain why they're opposed to basic common sense measures that are supported by the vast majority of the American people. They would lose, and we would be able to send this to the president's desk. And there are, I mentioned some of the other things that are out there that we can pass, and we need the Senate to take them up, and the Senate can pass them. There is a majority, and Nicole, I can't let it, especially when there's an awful school shooting like this, I can't let this pass without pointing out that in so many ways, the reason that we're in the majority in the House, the reason that we took back the House majority was because so many people got energized by the young people of Parkland and Coral Springs who created this movement and that made gun safety an issue in the election. And it delivered a majority in the House. It delivered a majority in the Senate. Joe Biden is the president. These young people aren't stopping. They're sick of seeing what's going on around them, whether it's in their schools or on the way to school or in the neighborhood on a porch. And so we've got the majority on our side. Only in Washington is this controversial.
Yep.
And if the senators continue to show this lack of courage, then they're going to be former senators, and we're going to get things done. I'm absolutely confident.
I certainly hope so. I hope you're right. You know, and Florida, we could do much better than Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. You know, Florida has a reputation. I tend to call it Florida for good reason. There, you know, I wanted to bring up Matt Gaetz. Which I hope we get him, see him, call him former congressman and, you know, see him up on charges soon. I can ask you about it. I know you're head of the ethics committee, and as such, because there's an ethics investigation into him, you can't comment on him, right?
That is correct. We made an announcement on Friday about the investigation that we started, and I unfortunately can't talk about matters as they proceed.
Gotcha. We can talk about the fact, though, that we do have another open seat. Alcee Hastings died last week. So we need to have a special election. Is there any indication from our governor as to when we will have a special election to fill that seat with hopefully a non-crazy person?
I've not heard anything from the governor yet. Hopefully he will acknowledge that the people of Congressman Hastings, the late Congressman Hastings district, deserve to have a representative, and that he should move as quickly as he can to schedule that. I hope that he does. And there are lots and lots of people who have announced, or I think likely will announce, that they're running. But for any of them, Alcee's shoes are very, very big shoes to fill. He was a towering figure in South Florida, in the House, in the Black community. He was an icon, and he was a really good friend and mentor to me. So he's really going to be missed.
All right. Congressman Ted Deutsch, I know you're busy. You got a lot of work ahead of you still at 6 o'clock at night. But I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope we can do this from time to time. It's nice to show the rest of the world that Florida is not all Florida, that we have some really good members of Congress. And I'm so glad you're my congressman. Thank you again for the work you're doing.
I appreciate that a lot. I'd love to do this again. Thanks, Nicole.
Not too bad, right? That's my congressman, Ted Deutsch. If you're interested in more, you can go to his website at tedforcongress.com. I guess it's because Deutsch is confusing to spell. All right. We're going to take a timeout, quick timeout, and come back on the other side with Ryan Grimm. He's the D.C. bureau chief for The Intercept. And he broke the story this week about Democratic efforts to expand the Supreme Court. And he also has some information about the PRO Act, which he'll explain because it's really important. And a couple other things, too. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler, your guest host today on the broadcast. If you want to know about a bishop and an actress, if you want to know how to be a star, if you want to know about the stains on a mattress, you can read it in the Sunday papers. Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm your guest host today, Nicole Sandler, filling in for Brad and Desi. I told you earlier, there were a few stories that I didn't get to in the first news segment of the program. So now we're going to check in with Ryan Grimm. He's the D.C. bureau chief at The Intercept. Ryan, you had a big scoop the other morning. I woke up in the middle of the night, as I tend to do, and saw your story that the Democrats, or some in the Democratic Party in Congress, were going to introduce legislation to expand the Supreme Court from 9 justices to 13. And lo and behold, yesterday, everybody else had the story. And I was pleased to see many of them credited you with breaking it. So that happened yesterday. A group of progressives actually introduced, if not the legislation, a proposal to do this, right? How did it go over?
Well, on the right, it created absolute apoplectic outrage for a day, and you'll probably continue to hear about it, you know, over the course of the next year and a half. And I suspect Republicans will actually use it as part of their kind of get out the vote strategy for the midterms in 2022, that if you don't take back the House or the Senate, Democrats are going to expand the court. And one of the first things they talk about is they're going to expand the court and they're going to take away your guns, which is, you know, very interestingly, not really in the top 10, probably, priorities, gun safety legislation for
Democrats
who are pushing to expand the court. because there is a lot they can do legislatively around gun control that they don't, that they just don't have the votes for yet. First, you know, the filibuster is in the way, right. And often they don't control, Congress. So that's not actually kind of the driving force here. The Republicans also talked about, they're going to take away your Christian liberties.
All right. Of course,
Undo the country that you, and your way of life. Democrat Nancy Pelosi has said she's not going to bring it to the floor. But what this is, though, is it's a threat. It's kind of a sword that is hanging over the Supreme Court. It's not that sharp yet. It's not held by that many hands, but it is hanging there. And so what they're trying to do is get into the heads of Supreme Court justices who are thinking about how far they can push their politics with each successive decision. And they want them to think, okay, if I push too far, is there going to be a political backlash that will come in the form of a political attack on this, on the Supreme Court? Everybody talks about how FDR's court packing failed in the 1930s. And that's true in the sense that he did not expand the size of the court, but the court also surrendered. The court spent the early 30s striking down, you know, every New Deal piece of legislation that came before it. After that, they started waving through the New Deal. The only reason that we have a court now that says that all of these different New Deal laws are constitutional is because they retreated in the face of this threat.
Oh, interesting. So I shouldn't be that upset that Nancy Pelosi pushed back and said, I'm not bringing it to the floor. That's just,
well, you should, because that dulls the blade.
Right. Okay.
So now Amy Coney Barrett's like, well, I was going to be nervous about overturning Obamacare or whatever else. But Pelosi has said that she's not going to put it on the floor. Now, she also knows that Democrats can change their minds. You know, if you have to ask yourself, what kind of decision could the Supreme Court issue that would get Democrats to change their minds on that? Democrats like Nancy Pelosi, and it's certainly not clear.
Right.
But Jerry Nadler, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, being involved with this is saying is that it's within the realm of possibility.
Okay. And that's encouraging. I mean, for those of us who are just, you know, sitting back going, how did we get here and what are they going to do about it? So at least there's some effort by the progressive faction of Congress to do something about it. And hopefully they've got the ball rolling and something will come of this. Ryan Grimm, I also want to ask you about a story that you've been writing about, the bill, the PRO Act. Mm-hmm. I haven't covered it much. Can you explain what it is and why you're saying Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona might be a hold up here?
So the PRO Act is borderline kind of revolutionary labor law reform. Mm. The last effort to significantly reform labor laws that came very close to passage was in the late 1970s under the Carter administration. They came one vote short. They felt like, okay, we didn't make it this time. We'll get it next time. As we know, there was no next time. Instead, there was Ronald Reagan, and there was the decimation of organized labor over the next 40 years. In 2009, organized labor pushed what was called EFCA, the Employee Free Choice Act,
right,
which would basically make it so that unions didn't have to go through elections like they just lost in Bessemer, Alabama.
Right.
And that if you got a majority of workers to sign a card saying that they support joining a union, then the NLRB would have to, you know, certify that those are actual workers, those cards are legit, and then boom, your union is recognized without having to go through this process whereby the company gets all of this time to, you know, basically coerce workers into changing their minds and backing out of the union.
Right.
Because, you know, they had 60 Democrats in the Senate, they had a chance, but right out of the bat, A couple of Democrats, Ben Nelson and some others, said, we're not doing this.
Right.
And
remember that. I mean, it was, what, 11, 12 years ago now. But yeah, they called it card check. But
Right.
But the Employee Free Choice Act, which then we've heard nothing about since. And here we are again.
Right. Right. And there wasn't enough pressure at the time to get rid of the filibuster. You know, they didn't do it on judges until 2013. And so. Right. And so that effort died. So labor went back to the drawing board and basically put together, you know, their wish list of labor reforms, and they put it into what's called the PRO Act, protecting the right to organize. And it would make it much easier to organize. It would expand the category of who's able to organize. It would make it much harder for companies to union bust. It would make it a lot of the tactics that these union busting law firms have used either illegal or much more onerous for them to pull off. It would strengthen the NLRB in a way that would tip the balance of power toward workers. It is kind of as a lot of companies' worst nightmare. It is, if it passed as it is, it would dramatically expand worker rights. It would possibly double union density. It would create, you know, a base of organized workers that groups like the Democratic Socialists of America think are necessary in order to accomplish their other goals. And so, you know, for example, you know, in DSA, the Green New Deal coalition is actually, the Green New Deal committee is actually making the PRO Act their number one priority.
Oh, really? Nice.
Because they feel like if you want to get a Green New Deal, you have to build up this mass base of workers first, who are then going to, you know, bring pressure to bear, you know, for the Green New Deal, for Medicare for All. It's, you know, Angus King today finally joined, and so there are now 46 co-sponsors. We had reported earlier that he was very close to signing on, and that he'd been inundated by phone calls both in support and against, because this is Chamber of Commerce, capital, the boss class, employers. This is the number one thing that, you know, that they're fighting in this Congress.
Wow.
It's going to be very hard to get it passed, but the fact that it's even a possibility has generated, you know, millions of dollars of lobbying by the capital class against it. So there are now four senators left.
Four. Let me guess. Joe Manchin. Kyrsten Sinema, right? Now Mark Kelly, who doesn't want to be alone in Arizona. Well, duh. There's only two of you, so you're going to follow everything Kyrsten Sinema does. And that leaves the fourth one. Who would be against the PRO Act? I'm guessing it's one of the senators from Delaware or one of the senators from New Hampshire who have both been a thorn in the side of the Democrats on other issues. Am I wrong?
Those would be good guesses, but because Joe Biden is supportive of it,
both
the Delaware senators are there. Like the Delaware senators, they're going to do whatever Joe Biden tells them to do. And so that's actually one reason I'm not worried about the Delaware senators when it comes to the $15 wage, even though they both voted against it, because Biden was against doing that parliamentarian thing.
Right.
And so if you can get it to the floor, Biden has said he supports 15. He will push those.
Okay.
We won't even have to push them.
Got it. So Coons and Carper are with Biden. They'll do what he says. They're, so that leaves Hassan Maggie Hassan and who's the other one from New Hampshire? I'm drawing a blank now.
Who is
Shaheen? Gene Shaheen.
They are both co-sponsors.
Really?
Of the PRO Act. To understand the true politics of the PRO Act, would actually lead you to who this final holdout is. And it's because it's such a class-based, it's more class than it is pure raw electoral politics. One of the richest senators is Mark Warner.
Oh,
of Virginia. And he made this fortune in telecoms. It's weird how, you know, there was an auction that he had an inside track on, and he was able to control a bunch of broadband space that as they were converting, the government was selling off a bunch of space. He got his hands on it, and he turned that into a fortune. And so naturally, we understand our capitalist class quite well.
Oh, yes.
That means that he considers himself to be a business genius. And so, you know, he very much identifies with this capitalist class and identifies with the business leaders around the country. And those business leaders are extraordinarily hostile to this legislation. And so in order to get him, you're going to have to either have some amount of just raw political power that pushes him there, which would be, you know, basically there you have 49 votes and you blow up the filibuster and you say, Mark Warner, are you really the one that's going to stand in the way?
Right.
I think that's actually the way you get him. Or you'd have to find some kind of progressive minded business class that could lobby him and say, like, this is why this is actually good for business, because he's such a kind of pro business ideologue.
Right.
But I think the former is more likely.
Sure.
Than the latter.
But that says you've gotten Manchin and Sinema on board, right, first, which is also a heavy lift.
Manchin's actually probably more gettable on this,
really,
than he is on other things, because West Virginia has, you know, 13%+ union density. West Virginia also has a proud, you know, labor history. Mm-hmm. That it's part of their kind of mythology of West Virginia is militant organized labor. That's still a backbone of what's left of Democrats in that state. So any future that he wants to have is gonna involve organized labor. So I think he's gettable too. Whether or not Sinema and Kelly are is another question. There, you know, Arizona has like 5% union density.
Right.
It's, you know, there's basically very little organized labor presence. And if Democrats want to say that they got close, but unfortunately couldn't make it, they could use Sinema as kind of the scapegoat, you know, for not getting this, over the finish line. But I think,
gotcha.
And people think it's very unlikely that she would sponsor it, but that if you get it onto the floor, she would vote for it. Now, in order to do this, you also have to get rid of the filibuster.
Right. Right, exactly, because you're certainly not going to get 10 Republicans to go along with it. And this won't go through reconciliation.
You got 4 or 5 Republicans in the House to vote for it. But, you know, a lot of people in the House didn't think it ever had a chance in the Senate. And so votes like that are less serious, which actually relates to the whole debate over whether you should put Medicare for All on the floor. When members of Congress don't think something's going to pass, then they just do what's purely in their, you know, immediate interests,
right,
rather than worrying about the consequences of it actually passing. And so a decent number of Democrats, I think, voted for the PRO Act who wouldn't if they thought that their vote was going to be the one that put it over the finish line. So in a way, you got to seize this opportunity and say, thanks, suckers. Now it's time to push it through the Senate. But like I said, this is going to be a huge, huge climb. But the fact that the business community is so focused on this is a sign that it's not impossible. The business community is not here, you know, to waste money for no reason.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So, this is it's a step in the right direction anyway. Ryan Grimm, one last question. You are the DC bureau chief for The Intercept. DC got one step closer to becoming a state yesterday, didn't it?
Right. I mean, this is the same question. Do Democrats have any interest in actually playing power politics? And it, you know, if they do, they would pass the PRO Act that, mm-hmm, you know, that it expands the base of voters who would support them. They would pass HR1, you know, which
please,
funds progressive
before
challengers,
the People Act, right?
Which then expands the number of people who are eligible to vote and blocks gerrymandering so that Democrats can actually compete fairly. They would end the filibuster so they can pass this legislation, and they would do DC statehood,
which would give us two more senators.
It's the right thing to do.
Yes.
You know, why don't I get to vote for a senator?
That's ridiculous.
Vote for a member of the House of Representatives. Yeah. That's not right.
Nope.
And I just, on a very basic level, that's not right.
That's it.
Also it would bring, like you said, two extra senators. Mm-hmm. And that's always why they've added new states.
Wow, interesting. All right, so a lot going on, and this is just a slice of everything exploded last night. So I'm gonna end it here. Ryan Grimm, thank you so much for spending some time with us today and enlightening us on these issues. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And with that, we've reached the end of another edition of The Bradcast. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for hanging with me for the past hour. If you like, I invite you to check out my show anytime at NicoleSandler.com. There's no paywall. Check it out. Hopefully you'll like what you hear and you'll come back. Or I'll talk to you next time. I'm in for Brad and Desi. Until then, good luck, world.